This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
I'm not a player, I just crush a lot.
Welcome in to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Watch us on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago. This is the best of The Last Dance as we count down to the final two episodes that will air on Sunday night at 8 o'clock on ESPN television. All the coverage here on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by Coors Light. And really, Adam, when we take a look at The Last Dance and what we've consumed to this point, really, the story of the documentary is the person Michael Jordan, and all of us kind of not only remembering how great he was, but also getting the insight on Michael Jordan, the person.
It's definitely been a Michael Jordan documentary, right? Like, we can say it's about the Bulls, but without the Michael Jordan interview, without the access, without him having the foresight to say, hey, film this whole thing for the last year of us being together for The Last Dance, we wouldn't have this. And it wouldn't be the same without finding out all of this stuff from the man himself, Michael Jordan.
That's Adam Abdallah. I'm Chris Bleck. This is the best of The Last Dance. And over the course of the next hour, we'll hear some clips from The Last Dance itself and also some of the great interviews coming up. We'll hear from Charles Barkley. But really, to get things kicked off, the question that was posed at the end of episode 7, is Michael Jordan a nice person? Let's go back.
Was he a nice guy? It couldn't have been nice. With that kind of mentality he had, you can't be a nice guy. He would be difficult to be around if you didn't truly love the game of basketball. He is difficult.
Through the years, you think that intensity has come at the expense of being perceived as a nice guy?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, winning has a price. And leadership has a price. So I pull people along when they didn't want to be pulled. I challenge people when they don't want to be challenged. And I earned that right because my teammates came after me. They didn't endure all the things that I endured.
Michael Jordan is down in pain.
Once you join the team, you live at a certain standard that I played the game. And I wasn't going to take any less. Now, that means I had to go in there and get in your ass a little bit. And I did that. You ask all my teammates, the one thing about Michael Jordan was he never asked me to do something that he didn't do. See this, and they're gonna say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy, he may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
So that's Michael Jordan at the end of episode 7 of The Last Dance. Bleck and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000, a special edition of the best of The Last Dance. And really, to me, that's the most impactful moment of the documentary, because it seems as if this is the way I consumed it, Abdallah, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like Superman is looking back at his career. It's something that we don't see in the movies, right? And there has yet to be a movie made about Superman in his late 50s and his 60s, looking back at all the awesome things that he accomplished over his career, but also knowing the sacrifices he made to get there. And that's exactly what that is. Michael gave everything to be the best. And if you didn't understand that as his teammate, he doesn't understand you, because he was doing it all to bring you along. The thing that hits for me in that clip is when he said that he wanted everyone to be along with him. And it wasn't just his teammates. It was also us, the people that live in the great city of Chicago. Think about how many times in the documentary Jordan has mentioned doing it for the city of Chicago. He didn't want to leave. He wanted to make the people proud that he went to. He's not from here. That's what I take from this, is that Superman is looking back at his career saying, don't you understand the sacrifices I made to get here?
I think that, you know, it's interesting to me listening to that clip and hearing what you said, Chris, and thinking about how a dude who has no ties to the city whatsoever cared so much about the fans. And that's the reason, you know, you look back at everything he did, whether it was, you know, what he did off the court for kids. You know, like, you've seen all the quotes from people in The Last Dance about him taking, you know, underprivileged kids and kids with disabilities and whatnot on, like, tours, and, like, always having time for them, and how, you know, he would spend hours after the game signing stuff and meeting people. And, like, you know, he was pulled from every direction at every single time, and it drained on him. And that's why he left the first time, and that's why he left the second time. And so, you know, when you look at this, to me, the most impactful thing about that clip, and I don't know if he broke in other spots, like, we haven't seen that, but he got that emotional. He didn't get that emotional when he was talking about his dad. And Jason Hare, when he was on with Waddle and Sylvie, talked about how he just seemed robotic when he was talking about his dad, because he's done it so much. And, like, it's not an emotion for him anymore. It's,
yeah,
just,
he knows the mental map to get to, like, that point, to give the answer to avoid being emotional.
But
I got you, yeah.
When they filmed that scene, Jason said that it was only in, like, the first or second hour of them filming anything of their interviews with Jordan. And Jason was like, I don't know what to do. Like, is this going to be, like, is this going to happen a lot? Like, is this going to be what we're in for? Is he going to want to come back and keep doing this? So that was something that they asked him early on in this. You know, they interviewed him for how many, like, it was 3 3-hour sessions. And so in the first hour of the first session, they ask him, do you feel like you're a bad guy? Like, what do you think of people's perception of you? And he gives that great answer and breaks and becomes emotional. He's so obsessed with winning and wanting to be the best that he gets emotional talking about it.
Another aspect to this here on ESPN 1000 is the Waddle and Sylvie Show got a chance to have Charles Barkley on, and Charles used to be really good friends with Michael Jordan. That relationship is no longer the same. And the conversation the guys had with Sir Charles about Michael Jordan was fascinating radio.
The thing that bothered me the most about that whole thing, I don't think that I said anything that bad.
No.
Because I'm pretty sure I said, hey, as much as I love Michael, until he stopped hiring them kiss asses and his best friends, he's never going to be successful as a general manager. And I remember, I'm pretty much verbatim, I said that. And the thing that's really pissed me off about it later is Phil Jackson said the exact same thing. And I'm like, no, man, if you're going to be, because listen, when you're famous, and Michael at one point was the most famous person in the world, everybody around you is either on the payroll or letting you buy drinks and dinner and flying around on your private jet. Very few of your friends are going to be honest with you. And that's very hard for any celebrity, but especially somebody of his stature. But I thought that was one of the reasons we were great friends. He's like, I can ask Charles anything, and I know he's going to give me a straight answer.
Right.
But part of my job is, because I can't go on TV and say another general manager sucks, and then just because Michael's like a brother to me, say he's doing a fantastic job. That would be disingenuous.
So did Waddle interpreted that Michael always wants to win, and by him admitting that what you did was not wrong and that he should repair the relationship, he's trying to outlast you because he wants the W in this, and he won't mend the fence until he feels like he's won the argument or this debate, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think one of the things when you're friends with somebody like Michael, you have to it's got to be on his terms. Like, you got my back no matter what. And obviously I feel like I would have his back no matter what, but not. Listen, let me give you an example. You guys been doing this, you said, for 13 years.
Right. Yep.
I'm pretty sure in 13 years, there's guys who you really liked, maybe played golf with, had dinner with, liked their family and friends and everything, but they suck in either the Cubs, the White Sox, the Bulls, you know, or the Bears, and you have to do your job on the radio.
Right.
And let me tell you something. It flat out sucks. It even sucks to this day when I have to say something bad about a guy, because there's guys I really like, but they do stupid stuff or they don't play well, and I'm not going to lose my credibility by getting on TV and say, oh, he played a good game, or no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do my job, because one of the reasons people have enjoyed our show, they're like, that guy going to tell the truth. And I'm going to always do that. And I know, like I say, I don't even know everything about you guys' life as far as talking about sports, but I'm pretty sure there's been times you're like, yo, man, we got to kill our dude. We like him, but we can't get on here and say this dude is playing well. Our fans ain't going to listen to the show anymore or take our opinion seriously.
Sure.
So how do you feel about how Michael has handled it? Are you sad? Are you upset? Are you indifferent to it now? Or are you just like, listen, I told the truth and he can't handle the truth, so if that's going to define our relationship, that's more on him than it is on you?
More sad than anything. Really, really sad, because the guy was like a brother to me for 20-some years, at least 20-some years. And I do, I feel sadness, but like I say, to me, he's still the greatest basketball player ever. I wish him nothing but the best. But there's nothing I can do about it, brother.
Right. So, there's no way it could ever get back to what it was.
Oh, he got my number. He can call me.
It would take him calling you and say, Charles, you were right and you were just doing your job. I was wrong. Does he have that capacity in him based on what you know of him?
Well, it's been a long time, so I guess not. How long have we been doing this now? How long ago was that?
Long time.
It crushes us, Chuck.
I mean,
like the relationship have for you, you deserve better in this.
First of all, it's painful to me because, you know, and the thing that's funny about it, people ask me about it all the time. I said, this is what happened. I'm not going to say anything bad about this dude. He's been great to me. He's given me great business advice. But like I say, you know, man, that's the one thing that sucks about our job. Like I say, I know you guys don't go on the radio ever, especially, you know, during the season. I know you guys ain't sitting around saying, hey, I cannot wait to go bash somebody tomorrow. This job doesn't work like that.
So that's Charles Barkley on Waddle and Sylvie last week. And really, the story of Sir Charles Barkley, the great Hall of Famer, and Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time, it really comes back to Michael Jordan, the person, and what we're seeing in The Last Dance. It's really lonely at the top, and that's something that we've seen. And hopefully at some point, someday, Charles and Michael can kind of get back together and get that friendship back.
So Ahmad Rashad was on a podcast yesterday with Charles Barkley and said that he's been watching these with Michael. And so,
watch parties.
And talked to Charles and said, I was on the phone with you and sitting next to Michael, but you hung up too quickly. I was going to hand him the phone.
Wow.
I think that this, if anything, will mend that relationship. I think that these episodes, bringing us all together as NBA fans and as Bulls fans and as, you know, children of the 90s and people that grew up watching this team and grew up watching Michael Jordan, and for young people that are just discovering Michael Jordan, this is bringing everybody together. And for it to bring the subject itself and one of his best friends back together would be something great.
This is the best of The Last Dance, and it's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Coming up next, the Pistons in 1991, they walk off the court, and we hear the story behind the scenes between Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is the best of the last dance. I'm Chris Black with Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Taking a look back at the documentary series on ESPN television, the final two episodes will air this Sunday night. Episodes 9 and 10 at 8 p.m. on ESPN television. And all the coverage here on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by Coors Light. If you had to go back to that time and pick one of the years to live through, what would be the one year you would pick throughout the documentary? Because obviously we hear all the music, we see the shoes, we see the pop culture, and then obviously the great winning by the Chicago Bulls. What's the one year you would go back to and live through?
That's a good...
Because I'm thinking about the shoes the most, and I really liked either the 91 or the 93 shoes the best.
Okay, see, we're...
Because people go right to the 11s, yeah, the Jordan 11s. That's what they always do.
Yeah.
But Jordan
wasn't
as good in 96 as he was in the first three-peat.
I agree with Jordan. That's his favorite shoe, and so I'm going to go with the man himself and say that the... Like, him coming... Because... It was, yeah, we had Jordan. It was great. It was awesome. The Bulls were great. And then he left, and you're like, well, now what? And then it's like, so him coming back is, I think, the year you want to live through, because then he comes back. Then you get the 72-10, and then you get the third championship. So it meant, I don't know, it just seemed better. Even though he wasn't as good of a player, he's still great, obviously. But I think that the second, you know, that first year coming back would have been awesome, because you're like, all right. Thought he was gone. Now he's back.
312-332-3776. So Abdallah's taking 96. I'm going to give you 93. If you want to join us, you can call us at 312-332-3776. All right, if we go back to the early days of the Bulls becoming the champions, it obviously took place in 1991. And not only do they beat the Lakers to win the NBA title, but it was getting past the Detroit Pistons. That's the marquee moment of the 91 playoffs. The Bulls were so good in that playoffs. And really, when you look at what they did defensively, one of the best defensive outputs in NBA history for a playoff run, that early 91 team for the Chicago Bulls. When they beat the Pistons and the Pistons walked off the floor, that was a major issue. We go back to episode 4 of The Last Dance. The Pistons walk off the court in the Eastern Conference Finals in 1991.
That was the only time that I think I'd ever been swept. In the series, I was normally the one doing the sweeping. Their time had arrived, and ours was over. As we're coming out of the game, Lambeer said, you know, we're not shaking their hands. This is how we're leaving.
Pistons wasting no time and getting out of here as they are headed off.
We didn't shake hands, no, we just walked up the court. Guys, thank you for kicking our ass.
They left the bench over the 7 9/10 seconds remaining. The Pistons just left.
I think it was very difficult for them because they were two-time champions. But, you know, there certainly has to be some respect.
Straight up bitches. That's what they walked off like. Now, we just kick your ass. Go ahead and go.
Detroit had a similar thing with Boston that we had with them. They had to overcome Boston, and they did. And I can still remember, it was the first time that Detroit beat them. And I can see Kevin McHale coming out to half court and shaking hands and things like that.
Now, Adrian Dantley was shooting a free throw, and the Boston Celtics were walking off during the game. And I grabbed McHale, and then he stopped as he was walking off the floor. That's how they left the floor. And to us, that was okay. Knowing what we know now and the aftermath of what took place, I think all of us would have stopped and said, hey, congratulate, like they do now. Hey, congratulate, love you, man, love you. Hey, congratulate you. I mean, we would have did it. Of course we would have done it. But during that period of time, that's just not how it was passed. When you lost, you left the floor. How's it?
This is Isaiah talking about the walk-off.
Well, I know it's all whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know, it's time enough to think about it. Or the reaction of the public that's kind of changed his perspective of it. Yeah, you can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he was.
Knowing what we know now and the aftermath of what took place, but during that period of time, that's just not how it was passed. Just wasn't. And you can go back and you can look at any of those old games or whatever. When you lost, you left the floor.
All you gotta do is you go back to us losing in game 7. I shook everybody's hand. 2 years in a row, we shook their hands when they beat us. There was a certain respect to the game that we paid to them. That's sportsmanship. No matter how much it hurts, and believe me, it hurt, but they didn't have to shake our hands. We knew we whipped their ass already. We'd gotten past them, and that was the most, that was better than, you know, in some ways winning a championship.
So that was episode 4 of The Last Dance. And, you know, Michael's right. They won game 1, 94-83. They won game 2, 105-97. They won game 3, 113-107. Game 4, they win 115-94. The games weren't close. I mean, the Bulls, the 4-0 sweep, it was not close. So, listen, it was sour grapes from the Detroit Pistons. The backlash that came after this documentary aired. And then Isaiah Thomas going on his PR blitz to kind of apologize, but then also say that they did what that's how you kind of do it back in the day.
That doesn't make it right. That's some BS. No. That's some BS.
Listen, my opinion has not changed about Isaiah Thomas. Let's let him tell us. He was on Waddle and Sylvie, and this is Isaiah Thomas with Waddle and Sylvie talking about not shaking hands in the Eastern Conference Finals back in 1991.
Well, I think all of us looking back on it, you know, 30 years ago, you know, the way things happened at that moment in time, I think if we all had a chance to do it all over again, I know myself and I can speak for several of my teammates, I think we all would have handled it differently. The emotion of that time, and let me contextualize this for you and put you back in a time period where we have, you know, we have been champions and we were down in that series 3-0. And Jordan, right before game 4, he had a press conference and he said that we were undeserving as champions. We were bad for basketball. And not only did he, you know, insult us personally, but he also, you know, the city of Detroit, you know, felt that also. And so what went into that decision and our emotions at that time was not only was we losing and getting our butt kicked, but at the same time, that type of personal insult to our team and knowing the journey that we had just gone through to win a championship and understanding the journey that the Bulls were making to win a championship. You know, we felt at that time that type of insult, not only to us, but also the city of Detroit, was truly uncalled for.
So that's Isaiah Thomas on with Waddle and Sylvie. And really, if you're looking at the Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan news that came from the documentary, I think number 2 would be the news from Isaiah Thomas and the rounds that he made after episode four aired on TV.
When you were a kid, when you were a youngster, a little tyke, a little Christopher Joseph Black running around, did you could use the excuse, well, he did it. Well, he did it, so I did it.
I don't think that's a good excuse. No.
It's not just because it's be the bigger man. Just because the Celtics did it, that doesn't make it okay. Be the bigger man. Look, I appreciate what Isaiah has done for the city. I appreciate what he's done for basketball. I appreciate the player that he was. But in that moment, he was a jerk. He was a Class A jerk. That's exactly what he was.
And they still are.
He still is.
They're doubling down.
Yeah.
And you say one thing in the documentary, and then you try to kind of backstep a little just because you're getting that. Listen, it is what it is. My opinion hasn't changed. I think many Chicagoans haven't changed their opinion and their stance on the Pistons either. Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. This is the best of The Last Dance here on ESPN 1000. Coming up next, Carmen Electra, Dennis Rodman at the Berto Center?
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Coverage of The Last Dance here on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. This is the best of The Last Dance. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We've talked about Michael, the person. We talked about on the court, the basketball. But one of the parts that I thought was most fascinating of the documentary was the crossover between the Bulls, basketball, the sports world, and pop culture. When Carmen Electra was introduced to the equation with Dennis Rodman.
Well, you know, she said it herself. You know, they met at a bar, and there was all this. Basically, everybody's been saying it through the entire time The Last Dance has been on. It was like traveling with the Beatles. You were traveling with rock stars. You were traveling with literal rock stars because these guys couldn't go anywhere. I mean, you try to be Dennis Rodman and go anywhere and not get mobbed. I mean, the hair, the tattoos, the piercings, everything. Like, he stands out. He knows he stands out. Michael Jordan has this aura about him that, you know, you can't get behind. You know, you can't escape if you're in the room with him. So to be traveling with these guys and to see the amount of celebrities that were always around them. And like, I remember the whole Carmen Electra, Dennis Rodman thing. Like that was the height of...
Listen, that was wheelhouse territory for Black and Abdallah.
I mean, was like, oh,
the
dang.
Height of Carmen Electra on Singled Out, and then mm-hmm. she was on Baywatch.
Oh,
I mean, come on now.
Absolutely.
So if we go back to episode 4 of The Last Dance, we get the fantastic story of Carmen Electra, Dennis Rodman, and Michael Jordan going to get Dennis from bed.
I do remember being in Vegas with him. It was on, the party was starting right away.
Big city love, bring on the sugars.
That's
that's not a recording.
One thing about Dennis, he had to escape. He liked to go out. He liked to go to clubs. We'd go to his favorite restaurant, then we'd go to a nightclub, then we'd go to after hours. It didn't stop.
Fat, breast, highly intelligent, that's the rest.
And all about getting a groove, all right?
It was definitely an occupational hazard to be Dennis's girlfriend. He was wild.
It's kamikaze time. It's time to blow your mind. It's kamikaze time.
Suck it out.
But to be honest, I didn't realize what the team's schedule was. I didn't know he took a detour.
Did Dennis come back on time?
Mm-mm. He didn't come back on time. We had to go get his ass out of bed. And I'm not going to say what's in his bed and where he was and blah, blah, blah.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I didn't want him to see me like that. So I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on, we gotta get to practice.
Dennis came back and joined the team. And that's the way it went that year.
I just want to take your body. Did you get your body to anything today, Dennis? You gotta put your body to things so the muscles have a memory they can do. Yeah. Come on.
Michael and Scott have accepted me for who I am. They said, you know what? He does what he does, but he cares a lot. I go party hard, but I'll work hard. I think that we get along so well because we want to win. We want to win a championship.
So that's Dennis Rodman, Carmen Electra, and Michael Jordan talking about the time that Dennis and Carmen went to Vegas, and then Michael had to go and get Dennis Rodman from bed. But they were back here in the Chicagoland area. So, you know, it was fun to hear the story. But also, the key there is at the end, Dennis Rodman saying how much he wanted to win. And that's a theme between the three of those individuals, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman. That's why it worked.
Look, players have said it before. Yurko says it all the time on this radio station. I don't care what you do except for what you do between those 3 hours that we're on the field, those 2 hours. Like, you can do whatever you want to when you're at home alone. I don't care. Like, if you go to, you want to go to clubs, you want to go to Vegas, I don't care. But if, as long as you are trying to win a championship along with us and you give 100% effort in practice and on the game and during the game, then I've got no problem with you. Because you know Jordan wouldn't have put up with it. If he was slacking during games, if this was affecting his play on the court, there's no way Jordan would have tolerated it.
Carmen Electra was on with Waddle and Sylvie, and she told that story. She talked to Waddle and Sylvie about MJ coming to the hotel.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were in Vegas so much. He loved Vegas. He was a high roller, loves to gamble. He was in Vegas so much that I can't even remember, you know, some bits are a little bit blurry to me because I can't remember if we were in Vegas and flew back to Chicago. But what I do know is that in Chicago, in Dennis's humble home, because he was very, very humble, and had just, you know, very small house by the practice facility, he would throw the mattress right in front of the couch, in front of the TV, and that's where he slept. So when we were together, that's where we were together. And we had one, it must have been a big night out. And like I said, I didn't know his schedule, or I would have been more, you know, on top of things at that time. But there's a knock at the door, and we're naked in bed, and he jumps up, answers the door, turns around and looks at me, and Dennis has this look on his face. He goes, "Oh, shh." I don't know if I could say that, but I'll say, "Shh, it's Michael Jordan. I'm late." He hurries. He gets dressed. I'm hot. I didn't want Michael to see me, you know, hungover and naked at that time. So I'm hiding behind the covers and the couch, and just in case he walked right in, I didn't know. And out went, you know, Rodman. He went to practice, and then I think everything was okay after that. But wow, what an insane story. Michael coming in.
That's Carmen Electra on with Waddle and Sylvie. They go on to talk about Carmen meeting Michael Jordan for the first time.
I do remember him telling me little stories here and there about, and he had a really big, Dennis would have a big smile on his face, like he was really proud, and it was very sweet. And he said, "Michael Jordan has a cover of your magazine at practice." And I said, "Michael Jordan knows who I am?" I mean, it just seems so surreal growing up with Michael Jordan. And it was a sports magazine, but it was a sexy, you know, it's one of the sexy ones. And then I remember being in Canada during, I think it was during the finals, and he said, "Michael Jordan really wants to meet you." And I said, "He does? He wants to meet me?" And he took me up to his room, and Michael was so cool. He was so nice. And you know, there was a couple nights, because Michael wouldn't really go out. He didn't go out. And in Canada, he did go out that night. I remember Dennis gave me a tray with shot glasses on it, and he says, "Take this over to Michael." And I can't remember if he had a shot or not, but everyone else did, and as well as I did. and it was just so surreal. It all was just so surreal. And then, of course, you know, during the final, the championship, when the Bulls won the championship in Utah, somehow I'm getting pulled into the locker room, and it was, I believe it was mostly all the guys in there at first, and they're just celebrating and popping bottles. Michael's popping bottles. They're pouring champagne down my throat. And I'm like, "Whoa, this is insane. How am I in here? This is crazy." And then more and more people were coming in, but I'll never forget that moment.
Carmen Electra on Waddle and Sylvie. Fantastic interview, and really one of the biggest stars of the 90s who intertwined with the hype and the incredible rock show that was the 90s, Bulls.
I mean, she was one of the it girls. It was her, Pamela Anderson, Pamela Anderson Lee for a while, back to Pamela Anderson. Carmen Electra, Jenny McCarthy, like those were, you know, the starlets of the that, like, you know, that everybody had crushes on when they were younger in the 90s. And it fit perfectly. Like, you were like, oh, yeah, she's with Dennis Rodman. That makes sense. And then you're like, oh, Dave Navarro. Makes perfect sense.
This is the best of The Last Dance here on ESPN 1000. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah. Coming up next, what did the stars say about the GOAT? We hear from some of the game's best talking about Michael Jordan.
You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Bleck and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Bleck and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
It's the best of The Last Dance. We're taking a look back at the documentary series on ESPN television. The final two episodes will air this Sunday night at 8 p.m. All the coverage here on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by Coors Light. You can watch us on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. It's Bleck and Abdallah. So now let's take a look at Michael Jordan. We know that he is great, right? But what do the other great players in the NBA say about Michael Jordan? If we go back to previous episodes, there was one episode that started with a specific player who not only did he play like Mike, he got pretty close to being like Mike, and that's Kobe Bryant. And here's Kobe Bryant talking about when he asked MJ for advice on the court.
It was a rough couple years for me coming to the league, because at the time the league was so much older. It's not as young as it is today. So nobody was really thinking much of me. I was a kid that shot a bunch of air balls, you know what I mean? And at that point, Michael provided a lot of guidance for me. Like, I had a question about shooting this turnaround shot, so I asked him about it. And, you know, he gave me a great detailed answer. But on top of that, he said, if you ever need anything, give me a call. It's like my big brother. You know, I truly hate having discussions about who would win one-on-one, and you're a fan saying, hey, Kobe, you beat Michael one-on-one. I feel like, yo, what you get from me is from him. I don't get five championships here without him, because he guided me so much and gave me so much great advice.
You know, if you took all the moments from the documentary and you put them into a bucket of the most important moments, I feel like the impact of Kobe saying, hey, everything that made me what I am, I took from Mike. I feel like that is one of those things that, yeah, it's awesome for Kobe to say that. It also cements how great Michael Jordan was when he played.
I mean, you look at those videos, they have the videos lining up of, like, step for step, Kobe making his shot look like how Jordan made his shot look. You know, like, Kobe was a Jordan, not a fan, but like a sycophant, you know, like he was obsessed with Jordan and being him because he wanted to be the greatest. And, you know, you got it. It was his era. It was his time. And Jordan left and it was Kobe's time. And Kobe took the torch and became, you know, the greatest of that era. And now it's LeBron. And it's good to see these younger players that have a chance to, that have just heard about Michael and now are getting to see all of this greatness that he was capable of, you know, during his time with the Bulls.
Michael Wilbon was on with Waddle and Sylvie, and he talked about Kobe and Michael's relationship.
Yeah, I was. I knew some of it. I didn't know that he felt that, you know, he built all this on the shoulders of, standing on the shoulders of. I didn't know that Kobe felt that way. As I think I told you guys back when we had those weeks when we were talking about the tragedy of Kobe's death, that I did know about how close they were. I did know that he called Michael all the time, and loved him and idolized him. And Michael took that relationship very seriously. He took the responsibility very seriously. I knew that. And I told you guys I knew from Kobe telling me, you know, after some big games, and he would jokingly say, you know, what would your boy have done tonight? Would he have 45 tonight? Why don't you call the old man? Let's get the old man on the phone and see what he thinks. See if he could have done that. And that was all just, you know, that was pure admiration. And so, I knew that. I knew that part of it. But to see Kobe talk about it, it was still just sort of arresting to see that, to see him now posthumously proclaim, you know, sort of what it is he understood about his own career and how it evolved in part because of Michael.
And when you look at Michael Jordan and some of the greats that he went against in the NBA, Clyde Drexler, he was on with Carmen and Yurko, and they went against each other in the 92 finals. And then we obviously heard in the documentary the relationship about those two going against each other in practice when they were both on the Dream Team in the summer of 92. Here's Clyde Drexler on playing Michael Jordan in the finals.
Well, I don't think he's trying to. He got nothing to prove to me. I mean, I think what was proven up until that point was, you know, it ain't no way you're going to stop him from getting his points, and ain't no way you're going to stop me from getting mine. So it's all about the team. You know, it's all about the team. If you're going to stop Michael Jordan, he has so many weapons, right? And so we knew that if he drove to the basket, he was going to get that quick whistle, and he'd get all our big guys in foul trouble. So we wanted to force him to shoot the outside shot because it was the lesser of all the evils because he's so talented. So there was a strategy.
Did you feel like he had something personally to prove to you in that series?
I didn't feel like it at the time. I mean, he had nothing to prove to me. He's a pretty damn good player. and I'm sure I had a lot of respect for his game already. And he had a lot of respect for mine. And so there was really nothing to prove. I think that a lot of people had doubts about who was the best two guard in the game or the best player for that point. At that time, there were a lot of questions. And there were some good reasons why people had questions. Because we had some great games and some great matchups. And I was on the short end of some, and I was on the big end of some as well.
That's Clyde Drexler. He went against Jordan in the 92 finals. In the 93 finals, Dan Majerle went against Michael Jordan, and they talked about that matchup in the documentary on The Last Dance. And Carmen and Yurko got a chance to talk with Thunder Dan Majerle, and they asked him, who's better, Jordan or LeBron? How do you think he answered this? Here's Dan Majerle.
Come on, man. I tell everybody all the time, and that's one of these things I hope this – and LeBron's a great player, obviously. But to me, there's no question. Michael Jordan was the best. His competitiveness, the way he played offense, the way he played defense. He was the best defensive player on the floor. There's nobody in this world can convince me that there will be a better player than Michael Jordan ever.
And that's Dan Majerle on with Carmen and Yurko. You know, something that kind of stands out were the comments from Tim Grover, Michael Jordan's trainer, in the episode after the Bulls lose to the Orlando Magic in 1995. Because this is a guy that was very close with Michael, and he's almost brought to tears by the drive and determination of one person just trying to be great. Here's Tim Grover on The Last Dance.
After the season, usually there's a time period where Michael takes some time off. The night they lost Orlando, I said, Michael, you know, I'm about to get out of here. Let me know when you want me to see you, because I'll see you tomorrow. Michael had an obligation to himself, the fans, his teammates, the organization, his family, everybody. He said, if you're going to sit down and take 3 hours out of your day to watch me on TV, I have an obligation to give you my best. To give you my best all the time.
There's Tim Grover.
What's crazy about this, and you know, you mentioned the main points of Jordan the competitor and what players have been saying about him. What the other thing is the drive, you know, like when we heard from Tim Grover there, we heard from Dan Majerle. Like if Dan Majerle would have said LeBron, there's a chance that Jordan would have showed up at his front door wanting to take him on one-on-one tomorrow. You know, like the drive and the anything was such a small slight to him, he would take offense with, even if it didn't come from the player. Even if it didn't come from somebody, even if he had to make it up, he was so driven to prove everybody wrong, even if it was the, walking by him at dinner when George Karl did or anything small like that. He took offense to it, and he made sure he used it as motivation against you to prove to you that he was the greatest.
Coors Light presents all the coverage of The Last Dance here on ESPN 1000, including Last Dance Mondays right here on ESPN 1000. The episodes 9 and 10 will air on Sunday night at 8 p.m. on ESPN television. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah. This has been the best of The Last Dance. Coming up next, three things I thought about The Last Dance heading into the documentary that I think were confirmed after we saw the episodes. That's next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.